All right, here we are. Welcome, welcome. This is Martha Beck, and it's February 3rd, and we're doing our third call about the Integrity Cleanse. And we've been, you guys are all so intrepid out there, like rolling up your sleeves and starting to act with integrity in your real lives, making real decisions. And we also got some interesting feedback. So Bridget and I are jamming about what's happening with the group. And you can always, I'll be coaching a couple of people later on, maybe more than a couple. But also I really enjoyed the back and forth last week, and I thought the lecture format was kind of dull. I'm being in complete integrity with you here. So we may, Bridget Boudreaux, are you there?
Oh, yes, I'm here.
So we will jam a little to try to, like, stand in for the whole group. But if we get it really wrong, can they raise their hands?
Sure. Yes.
So, and that's
star two to raise your. But I don't know that I want to frame it up as if we get it really wrong. but if people have burning questions, hit star
okay.
two and to be in my absolute integrity, we'll have you there. And if it, we'll just see where the thing goes. If it fits to take questions, if that's where you want to go, we'll go there. If you really want to relay some key points, we'll do that. So
okay.
That's how it's going to go.
So what you're seeing, you guys, is the result of a whole way that we decided we were going to work. We just had a staff retreat for all the people that work with me. And the entire thing was a weekend just to see one thing. If everyone was in their integrity all the time, doing exactly what they wanted and what served them best, what would happen to the group? Would there be conflict? Would there be fragmentation? Would there be disassociation? Would there be arguments? You know, I really don't know. My theory has always been that if everyone follows their own North Star, your own deepest truth, you're always in harmony with the power that creates the universe, and therefore, if everyone does that, everything will flow beautifully. But it's always been theoretical for me, except for my own life, where it really has worked that way. And what we saw was, it was kind of amazing. There were like a few little things that people brought up that they were slightly uncomfortable about. And then we just kept checking in, integrity check, integrity check. Are you doing what you love? Are you comfortable? And it was bizarrely harmonious.
It truly
was.
Tell
me where I'm wrong, Bridget.
It was bizarrely harmonious and fun.
So relaxed, you know? And the way we show up, like we showed up and one person in the group said, well, what are the rules? What's the agenda? What are we doing? And I said, this is the only agenda. We're all going to stay in our integrity for 4 days with each other and then say everything out loud that needs to be said. So you don't keep anything to yourself, you don't lie, and you don't do anything that feels not true for you, and let's see what happens. And she looked like her eyes got big, and she said, well, that's unusual. And it is unusual because we have – sorry, I'm going to give a little lecturette here. We mistake a set of rules that are rigid for integrity. Integrity is always being in the flow of your own heart. The rules try to keep things always in flow as well. But, for example, this is – I love the great religious teachers in all religions. I'm not religious myself. But I grew up in a sort of a Christian home. So, I mean, it's more a Judeo-Christian tradition than anything else. So I often refer to the Bible. And Jesus said very clearly, the laws of God are written in your heart. And it's through love that you find them. Stop looking for the rules outside yourself. And then that's the same thing Rumi, the Persian poet, the Sufi Islamic mystic said. It's the same thing you hear in Buddhism. It's the same thing you hear from enlightened people anywhere in history or people who have achieved this state of no suffering, huge compassion, you know, just a completely realized and joyful state of being. They all say the same thing. Don't look to the rules outside your heart. The rule book is inside, and it can you never know what it's going to say. So instead of getting on the call and saying, we have an actual, like I'm looking at an actual agenda broken down in minute by minute what we thought would work for this call. So it's not like we didn't do that. But when we're in the moment, it's all about checking in with integrity and seeing if it feels absolutely sweet and good to do a certain, to do what's on the schedule. And if it doesn't feel sweet and good to do what's on the schedule, we go deeper and find what feels more joyful, and we make that decision in flow. And another thing we do is we show you that that is our process. We're not going to pretend that we're in charge and we have this perfect plan that never changes and we know the rules. We do. We all know the rules, you guys. The rules are in your heart. The rules are in my heart. The rules are in Bridget's heart. And what I found in our big experiment this weekend is that when everybody goes to the heart, it is weird. Like everyone comes up with the same decision at the same moment. Everyone wants to start something at the same time. It's really kind of amazing and wonderful and a miracle. It starts to feel like an ongoing miracle. So that's why we're yammering right here on the call about what we're going to do on the call. What I saw, Bridget, I was just saying to you before we got on the call, the feedback online, I saw a pattern repeating over and over, mm-hmm. and that was people going to a place to make a decision that was not really home.
Mm-hmm.
So you remember the meditation we did last week, Eben Alexander's meditation, you are infinitely loved, you are always safe, and you cannot make a mistake.
Can I just, I saw the same pattern, and what it made me think of was, you call it the yes-no, but it mm-hmm. was, to me, it was the yes-but.
Yes-but,
I need to make money. Yes-but, what will others think? Yes-but, I don't want to hurt someone's feelings. And all that arises from, as you put it, not being home.
Right. So everybody on the line, if you right now just think about something you would do, but there's some other reason, and feel like I would be playing with my pogo stick now, except I need to go to my job as a stripper or something. I'm sorry, the pogo stick and the pole kind of got meshed in my mind. Anything, like, I really would, like I used to think, I would love to go jogging again, but my knees don't work right anymore. My body can't handle it. And you'll find out that the catch on every single one of those, the butt, when you sit on your big fat butt, is fear-based. Almost all the time. I suppose it can be love-based, but almost always the yes, but, the desire to go forward hits that no, you cannot. And that's where the but phrase follows. So you're starting, even if you have even the slightest feeling that the universe is not friendly, and it's been so recently that I've had even a day, solid day, of really, really feeling the universe is friendly. But if you make a decision from the position of, I am not infinitely loved, I could be unloved, I am not always safe. Are you kidding me? I would starve to death. I would die of dehydration in 4 days if I don't keep it, you know, moving forward and getting. I am not always safe. And I can make a mistake. This could go completely wrong. This could go south. This could go sideways. This could be pear-shaped. This could be horrific. So that energy is the war on truth that the ego wages to keep itself in control. And it's a well-meaning little bug, but it's wrong. So real integrity will get you, it will drill you down to the deepest truth of your being. And from the deepest truth of your being, you can feel rising in you, I am infinitely loved. I am always safe. I can't make a mistake. So, Bridget, do you ever play computer games with the little characters, with the avatars or whatever?
I have, yeah. Yeah.
Were you a Dungeons & Dragons nerd?
I wasn't, but I loved video games when I was a kid.
Okay,
sure.
So I've said this to a lot of you, but I'm going to say it again. Another thing that comes when people get very still and they notice what's true for them is that they begin to see that the world is more, or what we perceive, is actually more like a video game than it is like the truth. So by video game, I mean we could sit down together and play a game, you and I, where I became, like if we played World of Warcraft, I could become a princess and you could become a wizard and we could go off on an adventure together. And as we went on our adventure, bad things would happen to us. We might even go to war with each other. And we'd be sitting there by the computer and your little avatar and my little avatar are doing things and we start to refer to them as me and you. I am the princess. You are the wizard. Don't you dare kill me. Oh, I can't believe you killed me. Don't fight me. My courage points are low. In other words, we start speaking as though, number one, this is a real world, and number two, we are the characters in this game. Now, they've done some research on kids who play a lot of these games, and everybody thought it would be rotting their brains and making them numb to violence and everything, and I'm not going to argue that case. There's not sufficient data, but one thing they found for sure with kids who play games where they can be a character that dies and then they can just play another game is that those kids are less afraid of trying and making mistakes. They don't mind. They know that they can just do it again, that this is not real life. It's not serious. You're not going to really die because the princess on the screen dies. Now, as you get more into that meditation, you are infinitely loved, you are always safe, and you can never make a mistake. Something that happens as you ground into that and feel, is it true or is it not true? You feel into it. And then there's a moment, and I cannot describe it except to say that you can get there if you get still enough, because it's available to all of us, where suddenly you realize, oh, this world is just a sleep and a forgetting. This is, oh, we made this as a game. We aren't these little avatars. I'm not this meat self on the phone. You're not that meat self on your phone. We are the soul that is one thing playing as separate things for the joy and the beauty and the love of learning, connection, adventure. And once you've grounded into that truth, you know that nothing ultimately is dangerous and that no mistake can really cause irreparable harm and that you will always be loved no matter what. So I wanted to just touch on one of the couple of the things. Did you read Lisa's comment on Facebook about what does one do when there's a true yes, yet the real need to make money plays into the doubt? Did you read that one?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
We've heard this one over and over and over and over. It's one of our culture's biggest group lies. And it will be, I mean, it is so solidly entrenched in our brains that money is the ultimate reality and that lack of money should drive all our decisions, the desire to get more money. I heard a report on heroin abuse in the U.S. this last year, and they said, you know, every 5 hours or something, somebody dies of a heroin overdose, and then the news people said, and here's the cost of that, like $4.5 billion in lost productivity. They had to quantify it as dollars to make it matter that people were dying. And that's how deeply we make money our God. And the lack of money drives all decisions. And the need for money justifies leaving our truth. So this is so common, and Lisa had the guts to show up to ask it. There's a yes, but the real need to make money plays into this doubt. The one thing I've found that helps me with this one is other people's stories. So I'm gonna, Bridget and I are gonna toss around a couple of stories about what happens when you start to experiment around that deep, air quotes, truth about money. So the first one I always like to tell is that when I was about 31, I was on track for a tenured professorship, and so was my husband at the time. And I had loved school. I'd loved graduate school. I loved everything about school. But when it came to teaching, I found myself bored with regurgitating information. I loved the students, but I was bored teaching, and I hated academic politics and so on. And my ex-husband, he did too. And there was a time when I was talking to, we decided to quit. We said, look, we're fairly young. If we're going to redo our lives, we better jump. We got to jump ship. And it was scary as hell. We didn't have other jobs. But I was getting such strong signals from my body that I literally, I thought I had bipolar disorder, because some days I would be deeply, deeply depressed. And I would, like, park my car and not have the strength to open the door and walk into a building. And then on other days, I was full of energy and life and had tons, and I was like, there's something wrong with me. And then I realized the depression was always coming on when I was driving to my job, always. I mean, nowadays, this makes me laugh because it had to be so extreme for me to notice. But at the time, it was just, I needed the money. We needed the money. We had to do it. There was a thing we had to do. So I finally said, along with my then husband, we said, we're quitting. And I went to the dean of the school where I taught. And the dean said, I said, it's gotten so bad for me. I cannot do this. He offered me more money and everything. I said, I can't do this because, and I told him how sick I felt when I was working. And I said, if I kept this job, I would have to, like, take massive amounts of antidepressants just to do the job. And he said, well, I'm on antidepressants. So the idea was, oh, my God. So I ended up quitting, went 18 months on credit card debt with no money, and it was scary, 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 scary. I had fibromyalgia. I had 3 kids under 4, one with a disability. I was trying to finish my doctorate. It was horrific. So one day somebody gave me a gift certificate to Barnes & Noble. And I had no money to buy books, but I went to Barnes & Noble, and the book The Artist's Way practically threw itself at me off the shelf. And I took this book off the shelf, I opened it, and I looked at the page, and my eyes fell on the sentence, God has lots of money. And it just landed. And I went home, and I said to my husband, you don't need to worry, I'm going to make money as a writer. And he's like, what, did you sell a manuscript? And I was like, nope, I just know. And I never worried about money from then on. Now, no money came in for another year. But I chose not to worry because I realized God has all the money. All of it. And I had come to believe very deeply, because I just had my son and I'd had a lot of mystical experiences, and I believed there was someone looking out for me. And, you know, the rest is history. I've made far more money in my life doing what seems completely bizarre than I would have if I'd stayed on as a professor. So that's my faith-promoting story. Bridget, do you have any that where you had to confront this fear of, but I've got to make the money?
Oh, yeah, only all the time. same thing. I used to work in corporate America with my marketing job, you know, my high mid-level manager job that made, you know, I made the requisite 6 figures and all that stuff. And it was nice, but I wasn't happy, and I was on my way to being depressed. And then I tried to, how you do anything is how you do everything. I tried every iteration of a marketing job that I could. You know, I was a supervisor in a big company, and then I was a, what do they call it, individual contributor in a startup, and I worked on the vendor side and the client side and this way and that way and consulting. And finally, I got to the end of that. I was actually working for a terrible boss who would just grind on me. And
thank God. Life gives us to get us out of there.
yeah, thank God for that guy. And I hit the crisis point, you know. I was feeling really bullied and unhappy, and but I still felt trapped. And so I thought, gosh, I don't need a therapist. I don't really need to go back to my childhood on this one and see what this is all about. And I had done career counseling, like the what color is your parachute kind of stuff, and, you know, you'll make a great real estate agent. And I was like, well, that's not quite going to help me here. And I discovered a coach, actually Pam Slim, and she had this blog called Escape from Cubicle Nation, and I was like, that's what I want to do. And she helped me to see where I was blocking myself. I had beliefs like, I need to have a new job before I quit a job. I should know what I want to do. You know, I need a paycheck. And we just hit those beliefs one by one. And then my mom did something in regards to the bully boss. Because it was very interesting, you know, my beliefs so were not true. Like, I figured I have to have a new job before I quit the old one. I was like, well, my parents believe that. Like, that's absolutely true. Checked it out with them, and they were like, hell no. And they both told me about times where they quit jobs that were untenable. So it was fascinating. And
so you notice how the story of another person can really help you. So so you jumped.
I jumped, and I ended up becoming a life coach. I discovered this woman, Martha Beck, who I didn't know from Adam.
All right. Enough long.
You know, and the story goes from there, right? But I was terrified. I was terrified the whole time that I was building my coaching business. And but I just, there was nothing that felt warmer. There was nothing that felt better than that. That was what felt good and right. And so no matter how afraid I was, there was sort of no going, there was no going back. And so
right.
It was, you know, jump and move forward, because going back felt like death. And there were really no other options available to me. So it was be afraid.
Right.
And keep moving. And then, you know, I began to start to learn how to be less afraid. But
so there is, this is a place where you can take somebody else's story and test it, even if you have your own fear. So another thing I like to talk about that changed my attitude toward money, but all remember, this is about everything. This is about every decision. If there's a but, it will be based on fear. And if you analyze the fear the way Bridget did, going to her parents, for example, she found out she was lying to herself, not meaning to lie, but she wasn't in integrity because she hadn't checked out the truth. So there's two other places I went that were really powerful for me. One was that I worked with some heroin addicts in Phoenix. There were people who'd come to a methadone clinic. They didn't have apartments. They didn't have anything. But they were spending an average of $180,000 a year on heroin. And when I found that out, I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Why do you not get an apartment? And they'd be like, oh, man, you know, I'm just out of prison, and you can't get it done, and I just don't have the motivation. I really wish I had a place to live, but there's just no way. Nobody's going to rent to me. Then I would say, well, how are you coming up with $200,000 a year for heroin? And their whole energy would change. They'd go, well, you got to get your heroin. You know, that has to happen. So they had a different set of beliefs around it. Like they were so connected to their heroin that they didn't let themselves slide into doubt. They just knew they had to do it. And then I went and met a group of people in Nairobi they lived in Kenya, and they were street beggars and women. And there is no one more poor and disadvantaged than an African female street beggar, okay? But these people had come out of poverty and built a huge organization. They'd lifted 300,000 people out of poverty. And it was through microloans and different things. But I wanted to talk to them. I wanted to find out what was it that did the trick. How did they use the microloan? What were their strategies? Blah, blah, blah. I thought it would be all about working with money. And they said, nope, there was this Swedish woman who got interested in it. She adopted a little African boy, and then she would go around and sit on the curbs with these beggars, these women, and she would say to them, I believe you can succeed. I believe you can make enough money to live comfortably. I see it. I believe it. And as their beliefs switched, they suddenly somehow became capable of bringing themselves out of poverty. Little by little, they would earn, and then they'd earn more, and then they'd earn more, and then they'd group together, and they started with little, like, fruit stands and sewing little things. And 300,000 people later, they had built on nothing but their shifted belief a whole sort of middle class of former street beggars. So a lot of people asked questions about feeling like yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And what I kept writing next to their, I print out your responses and I write next to them, and I kept writing, have you gone home? Were you at home when you made this decision? Because if you were home, where you know that you are always safe, you are infinitely loved, and you cannot make a mistake, that sweetness just flows. And Bridget and I, this is how we run my business. So, you know, the way we're running this call, talking about what do we think will work? Let's try this. It's not the way Bridget was trained. It's not the way I was trained, but it's the way that works. So, Bridget, I don't know if you have any words to say about how do you go home in like 5 minutes? Can you tell us, how do you go home when we're making an unorthodox decision that feels very risky with money? Like, how do you get to the place where you can make a decision that is based on this deep knowing that the universe is friendly?
I don't know what the sequence is, but one part is with my body, and so I notice for me, I think of it as my reference point, but my anxiety pattern is to scan for my reference point outside my body, and that's also, I think, thinking with the mind. What
right.
do I do? Da, 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 what are the options? La, la, la. And so what I do for me is I think about and I feel putting my reference point inside my body, because that's where home is, that's where I live, and that's
mm-hmm.
where the reference is. So it's right in the middle, just right above my solar plexus. That's home. So I physically get in my body, breathe, and then we talk about it, and we go where the energy goes. And it's being really honest about, boy, it seems like we should send, I don't know, press releases to everybody about Martha's new book. That is
right.
what we should do. And then that just feels like crap. And
yeah.
you and I, and so I think it's being able to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, just, oh, that just makes me want to stab myself. So that's out.
I can give you an example. As we're getting close to publishing this book, we got advice from everyone we were working with, you need a publicist.
Oh, yeah.
And it just didn't feel right to us. And we got so many people told us this, but both Bridget and I were like, that feels horrible. And I don't even know if it's the right decision. We may find out later, oh, we made a terrible mistake. But once you start following the compass inside you, once you start finding home and then you know what it feels like to leave home, it's like so crystal clear. That is a big, fat no. And so far, nobody's told us that that's a smart decision, but we're making it anyway because we've learned to start at home and stay at home.
Actually, to build on that, I was a little bit more wobbly on it. You were a clear no, and I was a little like, you know, I was feeling more of the pull of the culture. So I was put in touch with a publicist, and I called her, and she basically said, I can't help you guys. like somebody else might charge you a lot of money. And she said, I'm going to be just, you know, the one publicist who's completely in her integrity. And she said, what you guys are doing for this project is exactly what I would do. Keep going forward. If you guys have another project that fits my criteria, let me know.
So.
And so, yes, to find the one publicist, and I don't know if it's, I shouldn't say the one publicist, but to find a publicist who is absolutely in her integrity to give me that advice. Excuse me, give me advice. I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah, and this is what happens. When you start making decisions from that home place, you immediately start seeing synchronicities that are trying to say, yes, yes, you're getting closer, yes, yes. The first place you get the signals is within your own body, but then you also get, like, people showing up to reassure you. You get little signs, little God winks. And suddenly you feel pulled forward by an enthusiasm and a joy. And it can be something really tiny, like what to make for dinner, or it can be something absolutely huge, like whether to quit your job. But the feelings are almost identical, and the sense of being in integrity is such a stable, sweet, you know, balanced feeling. And you recognize when that's off, and you begin to find yourself your way back. And as you get old and haggard like me, you have enough experience to see, oh my gosh, when I go with the still, the sweetness, the joy, the relaxation, even at those times when it says the money won't be there, or he will go, you know, you'll lose the love of your life or whatever, it always works to follow your integrity. And it never works to go out of your integrity and try to make something good happen. But the distinction is very small. So I want to coach some people now. We have Gia on the phone. Well, we have her on
the call
list. Gia, if you can hit
*2.
So
raise your hand, and then I can find you.
We must all sing You Light Up My Life, all of us in our separate homes.
All right, here we go.
I think I'm here.
You are here.
Hello?
Woohoo!
Yeah! Yoo-hoo!
All right. So you wrote in, do you mind if we talk about what you wrote?
No, you can talk about what I wrote.
Okay. So your question was about a brother. Your brother that you have a very sweet relationship with after not always having such a sweet relationship, and then he's with someone that you didn't think matched him well, but he said, yay, we're together, and I hope you're happy for me. Am I getting this right?
Yeah, almost.
Oh,
yeah.
Tell me where I'm wrong, please.
He has a relationship up and down, but this is a new relationship for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he started to say, like, the relationship was really not working, and so that was it, he said. And then out of the blue, he called me and just like, he said to me on WhatsApp, oh, the relationship is working again. It's totally happy.
Okay. So you wrote that you, everything that I should be happy, but you wrote, why do I feel so awful about it? And you said, you're afraid that he'll lose himself in the relationship, and you turned that around to, I am losing myself in the relationship. And then you said you're afraid that he would stop communicating with you again, because he did
mm-hmm.
for a while. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So what?
That's correct.
Okay. So the key thing, you guys, we're going into the unit on relationships, and one thing I noticed about almost the money was one big thing. Almost all the other feedback had to do with fear of what other people will do if we are really honest. If I am coming from my real truth all the time in a social group that has rules that aren't according to my heart, then I will lose love. Okay? So losing love, losing your safety and finances, and the fear of being wrong are the three big things that will push you into a mixed decision or a bad decision. So, do you know where you slid off your integrity, dear? Do you know, you identified, you wrote down the key lie that you've been telling yourself innocently. Do you know what it is?
Well, the thing is, I'm losing myself in the relationship because I've been so going much over this. But where I try to communicate with him and trying to help him form his opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I already did not be totally into my integrity.
Right.
When
right.
I was talking with him about her,
mm-hmm.
I feel like there that whilst I was trying to empower him and make his own decision, I feel that I did not exactly say how I felt about it, how
right.
it felt me. Yeah.
So you told him, you wrote, "I'm glad for you when you're at peace and happy, and good if you are finding it with her. But now you feel very sad and disconnected and all knotted up in the stomach." Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the key lie here is that you'll lose love, your brother's love, if you live in your truth. So you told a little white lie. It looks like a little white lie, but your body's saying it's actually a big lie, because you
mm-hmm.
thought, if I lie to him, my brother and I can still have a good relationship. That was
yeah.
it's subconscious, like, I'm going to have to lie to keep this a good relation, a good, solid, loving relationship.
Yes.
But I really want you to, you know, press the slow motion camera and look at yourself in the situation with your brother. As you feel pressured to move away from your truth, and then you do move away from your truth and you give him the answer he wants to hear, notice what happens to the love between you. How does your feeling toward him change or shift or move as you tell a lie to make him happy?
Mm-hmm. Actually, I feel like I'm rejecting him.
You are.
mm-hmm.
Because you've now taken your true self out of the relationship. You've
mm-hmm.
put in its place, every time you tell a lie and pretend to believe it, you're actually creating a false self. And then you're offering
mm-hmm.
the other person a false self that you think they will love. But if you check in your heart, you realize that your real self now is separated from your brother. Can you feel that?
Yes, I can feel that, yeah.
Okay, so I know you guys are going into the relationship unit, and it really seemed to be an issue already, so I'm going to hit this pretty hard. So, my dear, what alternative might there be to the... So you're still... This lie still stands between you and your brother. He thinks, you know,
mm-hmm.
that was the last he checked in, although... I must tell you, I bet he can feel in his body and in his heart the distancing. Even though you did your best to lie well and lovingly, we believe in the truth of the loving lie. That's just not possible. Lies are not loving.
Yeah,
so,
initially I was not doing it. That was the whole thing. Initially I was not doing it. I was just saying, like, well, keep on listening to your body. And then he says, but I want you to be happy for me. And then I just said, yes, you know,
yeah.
I went
so
into
you, right. And you knew what he wanted you to say. And you said
mm-hmm.
what he wanted. So
mm-hmm.
what might be another option? So there you are, and he's pressuring you hard to give a certain answer, and you can feel it's an energy that other people project that wants to pull us into doing what they want. And this happens to all of us every day, all the time. So that's why it's really worth looking at. So his energy is pressuring you to say what you finally said. So we're going to slow motion camera and then stop. And you can do this 50 years after making the decision, you guys. You can clean it up this way. You go to the moment you've left your integrity and you stop and you go inside. And you find, what was the truth? What is the deepest truth? So Gia, do you pronounce your name Gia here?
Yeah, Gia. Yeah.
Gia, okay. So if you slow it all the way down, and your brother is pressuring you, and you feel his anxiety, his need, his love, you feel your love for him, and it's like a kid begging for ice cream, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you told him, oh, it's fine, I'm happy for you if you're happy. What's your real feeling? What comes, if you were to say the truest truth from your heart of hearts right now, instead of what he wants you to say, just in a very calm, gentle, kind way, let yourself speak those words to us, not to him. Just tell us.
For me, it would be... For me, actually, I'm doubting if she would make him happy.
Sorry, say that again, please.
I'm doubting if he will make her happy.
Okay. So what do you feel? Is it mad, sad, glad, or scared? Where do you feel it in your body? You said you felt knotted up in your stomach. So where do you feel the truth? If you
I feel mostly sadness.
Okay, so there's a sadness. We're going to just, this process is just, you guys, slow is fast. This is what my horse whisperer friends taught me. When you're doing this process, slowing it down and getting it clean and right is so powerful. And working with one decision where you're out of integrity and manipulating someone to make them happy, slowing that down and working through one of those will do you more good than, you know, 25 different things that you do in one day. So we're going to stay really slowed down here. Go into the sadness at that moment. What is the sadness saying, sweetie? Why are you sad?
The sadness is the sadness is that he is not there for himself.
Okay, now this is something I really, really wanted to talk to you guys about, because almost everyone who commented said they were sad about what's going on in the life of another person. But you can never know what another person's mission is, what their destiny is, what their fate is. So the moment you tell yourself, I am motivated by his happiness, my only thoughts are about her peace of mind, you are out of integrity. The only way you can make a true decision grounded in deep, deep integrity is to look only at your own life and your own decisions. We simply don't know what's right for everyone. So I'm going to ask you again, dear. Why are you sad? How will it affect you if this is the wrong decision for him? Like, say he makes it and it's the wrong decision. How will that affect you?
Yeah, it's a sadness for myself that I don't have a relationship anymore with him. Yeah,
I'm going to lose my relationship with my brother.
Yeah.
So you're sitting there and you're thinking, oh, I'm going to lose him. I'm losing him. He's going with this woman, and I'm going to lose him. And you start to manipulate to keep him. Do you see how that works? Mm-hmm. You told a lie to keep him with you because you're afraid that you're not infinitely loved and that his love is necessary to go on. So, but notice, as you lied to him, you did lose him. It was the lie that distances you from your true heart from him. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So a fear-based decision, a fear-based decision always creates what we fear, but only always. So I'm going to quote Byron Katie again. She talks about there being three kinds of business in this world: your business, my business, and
my
God's business.
And God's business, yeah. Oh, so, I know it too well.
So whose business is it? Who your brother marries or goes with?
His business. I know.
It's his business. And your business is what?
Your business is my relationship with him. That's my business.
And the truer you are with him, the more absolutely honest you are with him, the more your heart and his heart come into harmony. And people cannot resist anyone who's so deeply in their integrity that their love is always genuine. That's what I saw with my team this weekend. It was just bizarre how harmonious it got when everyone knew they could leave, that people were doing things that you don't ordinarily do in a business group, and everybody was fine with it. Everybody was just being themselves, and there was so much love. So can you think of an alternative that would actually avoid trying to lie to your brother, that would be true to your integrity and also serve in this situation? Like, what could you do besides lying?
Mm. Let me think, because I would just say nothing, but that's my normal pattern.
Okay, so Alexander Solzhenitsyn said there are times when silence is a lie. So you go with your brother and his new girlfriend, and you don't say anything about how miserable you are. Is that integrity?
No.
Nope. So
no,
I'm ruling that one out. What's another thing you could do?
I could say I love him.
Yes. And he says, but what about my
girlfriend?
Then I didn't
say. What could I say?
I'm letting her stew in this, and I'm hoping that people are paying attention, because you will have to confront this in your life as well. I guarantee it. And I want to show you that our culture doesn't give us or doesn't teach us the alternative that creates more love, which is always to tell the truth in kindness. That's the big atom bomb message of today. Tell the truth. You'd be amazed how well it works. So, Gia, you be your brother. And I'll be you, and you tell me how excited you are about your new girlfriend.
I'm the brother. Okay. Oh, we're totally happy again, and we talked a lot, and you know, we see a great future with us.
Wow, you know what? I love you so much, and right now I'm feeling knots in my stomach. And it's probably just because I'm afraid of, well, that's what it is. I'm afraid I'm going to lose you. I feel really conflicted about this. And I'm so worried that if I don't say the right thing about your girlfriend, that distance will come between us and we won't have, the love we've built in the last few years is so precious to me. So please, can you help me deal with this?
But. You know, I really, aren't you happy for me?
Well, I don't even know whether I'm happy for you or not, because I'm having this problem of being afraid that you'll stop loving me and that our relationship will go south. So, you know, I'm sitting here in this thought that feels like a lie, but it's about you not loving me anymore. So I thought I would check with you and see if my feelings of fear about losing you are actually true. Am I going to lose you? Am I losing you if I don't love your girlfriend right from the get-go? Am I going to lose you?
No, you're not. Oh.
I'm so relieved to hear that. And I know that your life is your life, and I still feel a lot of conflict, but I can see how my fear is about my own, you know, my fear of losing you again. So I'm going to have to work that through. The one thing that I do know for certain is that you're a wonderful, wonderful person, and I want you next to my heart always and forever.
Wow. That feels very good.
You see how vulnerable it is to tell the truth in kindness? Never to say, well, I know what's good for you, ever, because we don't. That's a lie. We don't know what's best for our kids, for our spouses. We can only know by going in, as Jesus said, to the rule book in the heart, and then telling the truth about how we feel. Now, you guys, this is a discussion with someone who's very, very dear and very intimate with Gia. So you don't have to do this if you're talking to Adolf Hitler, right? And your integrity will tell you. So, Gia, you just said that feels good, the way we just talked about it, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, that feels
so,
really good.
So
it sounded like me. It sounded like me.
Oh, good.
In my integrity. So it really hits, like a truth.
Yeah, she's back home. She's back.
And
home.
I have almost happy tears. But
yeah.
It sounds really good. Yeah, it really sounded like I'm talking to my brother. Yeah.
Yeah, and just like, I mean, that feeling of coming into integrity, of knowing what to say, and that it's just telling the truth. And then you figure out how to say it, like, I'm so conflicted, I don't know what to do, I'm afraid, I love you. And you realize, oh, that's what my integrity wants. And you can wallow in that like it's some sort of, you know, fabulous spa treatment. It is like such ease in the heart and such love for yourself and for your brother. And integrity opens the channel of love.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important that we work out where we're not telling the truth before. It's really important that Gia came to us so that we can talk about it, because in the moment, her pattern would be to lie and manipulate out of love and then feel distant and separate and maybe in the future have a fight. I've never felt close to you since she moved into your life again, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you think it's that, yeah. And
yeah,
so
but
like,
really...
Well,
it's about you leaving your integrity so that you're no longer available for intimacy, real, genuine, loving intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to explode like that. You don't want to scream the truth at someone dangerous or someone psychotic or whatever. But you do want to know what's true for you, and then you go forward by telling people when you're conflicted if you love them. Or if you don't, like if I was doing a business deal, I'd say, you know what, 50% of me feels good about this, 50% feels bad. That's, no, it's not pure integrity. I'm sorry, I'm not doing it. So I can
mm-hmm.
be business-like. It depends on the relationship. But I really am looking forward to hearing if you go and have this conversation with your brother.
I will, yeah.
And you know you can
And I'm totally going for it. No,
yes.
I'm going
You're so
for
brave.
It. I've done, this is my second integrity cleanse, and I've done quite some, and it feels so great. So I'm a real integrity cleanse fan, but
yay!
It was like, and I was like, how did I do this? And then I thought, oh, this is a lie, so let me just post it.
And you wrote in,
and I feel good about that I did. So because this is really, it seems such a tiny lie, and then it's so huge, and it's such a learning experience. So thank
Always.
You for helping me here.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you, dear. And you haven't made a mistake. You cannot make a mistake. You're just brilliantly learning because you have so much courage to stay in your integrity. And when you don't know what to do, you have the integrity to say, I don't know what to do. And
mm-hmm.
you're wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So any questions or comments? If you have burning questions before I go to the next person I want to coach, could you press star 2?
So Judy, go ahead and press star 2. All righty. Hello, Judy.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing today?
I'm good.
Okay, so you wrote in a question that was also about family members. Did Gia's example ring any bells for you?
Yes. I am more in a triangle situation where
mm-hmm.
I have one daughter who is engaged,
mm-hmm.
just got engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Susie.
Mm-hmm.
And the other daughter, the older daughter, thinks that her fiance is manipulative and controlling. And
oh, wow. I didn't know. It's almost literally the same situation that she is in.
Yeah. And sort of blasted me with that truth of hers, and yeah, I was going really well with integrity cleanse. I almost felt like in the Matrix where there's no spoon, if that makes sense.
Say more.
Well, that none of it can hurt you.
Yeah.
And not to be afraid of anything.
Yep.
And then when I got, you know, they had this disagreement. One daughter thinks the other daughter's being cruel and controlling, not knowing what she thinks. And then the other daughter shared what she thinks. And I just found myself doubting that I even knew what integrity felt like.
Right.
That maybe I was using my integrity to be in a rabbit hole or an ostrich in the sand, just be in denial rather than being in integrity. So then I just doubted everything.
Being in denial would look like what? Not paying any attention to this fight between your daughters?
Yes, and not even noticing what the older daughter noticed, because I haven't seen it.
Okay, then. So, once again, isn't that interesting how you can go, you can be in such a very, like, amazed space, like this is almost miraculous, and then zip, you're out of integrity, and it feels like you have no idea what's true anymore.
Yeah, I feel like you're upside down.
Yeah, and you've left home, and without that, there's no foundation. So right now on the phone, you know, your daughters aren't here. There's nothing to lose by you feeling at peace. So right now, can you find that space of home right now by just knowing that you are always safe, you are infinitely loved, and you cannot make a mistake? Just repeat those things and see if it takes you home. Surrender, breathe, relax, receive.
Okay.
Allow, receive. Okay. So do you feel a little calmer now?
Yes.
All right. So whose business is it if Susie marries the wrong person?
Her business.
Yeah, it's her business. And your other daughter, I didn't get her name.
Rebecca.
Okay. And whose business is it if she's upset by the marriage?
Her business.
Yeah. And whose business is it to make you feel good?
My business.
You are getting 100%. This is
But I'm a mom, and what mom doesn't want their child happy?
Okay, now we've run into a very big, a cultural assumption. Now, I told one of the people I coached last week, I said, you are at the point where you will leave culture altogether and go into a wild space. And that's the awakened space,
mm-hmm,
from what I see.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a rule that you keep unswervingly and you're running into, it doesn't feel like integrity, the rule may be wrong. This is why you go through the paid process. It's like a big thing to accept that any belief you have could potentially not be correct, even if it's a social rule. So, for example, it used to be true that folks who considered themselves to be very good, God-fearing Christians owned slaves. Now, do you agree with their truth? They say they believe that. If it doesn't work for you, you say, oh, but I'm a nice lady. I don't, in 150 years ago, you would have said, I don't speak out against slavery. Good people don't do that.
Right.
So there's
right.
a social rule. And right now your rule is mothers can't be happy if their children aren't completely happy.
Mm.
Is that close to the rule in your head? What is it saying? So be there in the situation. There's Susie. There's Rebecca. And they're having this spat. And
it's my responsibility to try to do something, even though I know doing something would be out of my integrity. That's
okay,
like,
so
yeah.
That shortens down to, it's my responsibility to leave my integrity.
So
that's
you,
the lie.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the lie that spun you out. And once you're spun out of your integrity, you can't find your way back usually. So we're going to do the very same thing. Slow it down. Watch yourself interacting with Rebecca, and she's saying Susie's fiance is bad. And then the thought comes up, I have to do something about this, even though I really, truly don't want to. Is that the belief, or is it something different?
No, that's spot on.
Like, I have no desire to enter this cat fight, but I have to because I'm the mom. Right?
Oh, yes, and P.S., because I have the delusion that getting involved might help. And I know that it won't. I know it would make things worse.
Yeah, you can feel, I mean, go in and say, oh, getting involved will help. What feeling does that give you in your body when you think, I have to get involved, that'll help? What happens to your body when you think that, when you believe
every cell says, no.
So are you really so far off your integrity, or are you just ignoring that it's waving huge red flags in your face? The feeling is, don't get involved. It cannot help. But your mind is overruling that and saying, no, 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 you have to get involved. You have to, you know, to be a loving mother, this is what you'll do. It won't work, and it will make me miserable, but I have to do it because I'm a good person, and that's what a good mother does.
Mm-hmm.
But the signals from inside you aren't taking you home at all as those thoughts develop.
Correct.
So in that moment, Rebecca's talking, you're thinking, oh, I should probably, she wants me to get involved. Oh, what is a truer thought? Truer than, I must get involved, even though it feels horrible and I know it won't work.
I can love each of my daughters. It matters not what decisions they make. They can't make a wrong decision.
Sure.
Even though I disagree with what she's noticed, I can still love her.
You don't need to disagree with it. You just say, I didn't notice that. It's not a disagreement. It's just not your experience. You don't have to come down on one side or the other. You come down on your own perception. Oh, I know him, and I don't see that, but that's my own perception. I may be wrong, but that's how that feels right to me, right? You know, you just tell the truth, but kindly. Tell the truth with kindness. That is the way home. Tell the truth with kindness. That is the way home. So what would you do in that situation if you were to stay rock solid in your integrity with no fear? No fear of losing their love, no fear that you're not safe, that they're not safe, no fear that you can make a mistake. Just telling the truth to Rebecca, what would you do?
I would say I haven't noticed it. I could be wrong. It doesn't matter because it's Susie's decision, not mine.
Okay, so you're leaving.
And there's a part of me that wants to reach out to Rebecca and say, why are you poisoning your life? This isn't the first time she's done something like this.
I was just going to say.
And my heart breaks for her that she sets herself up for repelling the very people that love her the most.
So when you said what you were going to say, look, it's not my experience. I respect you, but this is the way I see it. End of story. That was closer to the truth for sure, but it wasn't the absolute truth. And you said it yourself. You caught it. You're really good at this, dear. You really are. And when you love someone very much, it's important not to hold silence, but you don't come out with something like, this is the rule, your business, my business, end of story. You say something like, you know what, Rebecca, as we're talking, I haven't really noticed what's going on with Susie's fiancé that you say. I'll keep my eyes open, but it hasn't been my experience, but I'm feeling really conflicted inside because I worry about you, and I've seen this happen before in your life, and this too is none of my business, but my heart is really troubled because I'm afraid for you, and I need to get rid of that. That fear is not real, but that's my perspective. I just wanted to share that with you because I've seen this happen before, and what comes up for me is, oh, I feel I'm worried about Rebecca now, and I want to just see why this is so disturbing for you. So you may go into a deeper discussion with her, right?
Right.
Not
or
because
I may not
you're
say that at all, because I'm afraid of what she. Or I might not say that at all, even though it's my truth. I'm afraid. I'm afraid of what she would say or not say. How would she? How she'd react?
So this
it's
is
like,
you guys are going into
like
the relationship thing. So
poking the hornet's nest.
Okay, so this is called lying in order to get people to like you or to love you. So what if you said, not because you're supposed to say it, you are not supposed to fix your daughter, you are not, but the first answer you gave me sounded very clipped and not like the personality I feel in you. The personality I feel in you is very open and tender, so it felt very rigid. So rigidity is not truth, you guys. The truth is soft and gentle. It is obdurate. It is as powerful as gravity, but it is not rigid. So I felt some rigidity, and that didn't feel like your integrity to me. Now we're going deeper. What we're saying is I'm terrified of you, Rebecca, because I'm so afraid that if I say what I really think, you're going to be really upset with me.
It's true.
That's the truth.
That's true.
And if she did get really upset with you, what would happen?
I would just have to deal with it.
And you have these terrible fears that it would, like, end everything.
Right.
Are you? And you've been operating on that, I would guess, for some years with this person.
Yes.
And with other people in your life. Do you modulate what you say in order to keep people from being angry?
Yes.
Okay, that's a huge Achilles heel. I have the same one. And this was my biggest fear going into my integrity cleanse, that when I told the truth to the people I loved, they wouldn't love me anymore. Because that actually had kind of happened in the past, like
right.
on a pretty major scale.
Right.
And guess what? You will find that if you speak your truth in kindness to someone and they can't tolerate it to the point where they have to rage or fight or get away from you, you cannot help them by lying to make them happy. All you can do is lose yourself. And that's what happened. You started to manipulate.
My mother raised me on the thumper philosophy, I used to call it when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Thumper says that, I think, in the movie
mm-hmm.
Gandhi. So not saying something can be a lie.
Absolutely. If it's burning a hole in your heart, if you don't know where your truth is anymore, if you feel upside down, as you said, that's a signal, ooh, I am not behaving in integrity here. Because integrity is not just keeping your mouth shut. Integrity is keeping your mouth shut when that feels right to your true heart, and speaking when that feels right to your true heart, no matter what. So if silence is right, you stay silent, no matter what. If speaking is right, you speak, always, no matter what. And you're always home in your heart. You're always home. So you've been spinning away from home to please people and to manipulate people.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the way you've played the game. So it's going to take a lot of courage. And then we go into stories about how our parents raised us and our religion and this and that and the other. But really, all we have to deal with in the present moment is I'm afraid to tell people the truth. I manipulate them to make them like me. That's just the God's honest truth. And you can do something about that. You can't do anything about the way your mother raised you. But you can definitely do something about lying now, here, today, to your loved ones.
Thank you.
Is this making any sense? I'm being pretty tough on you.
Yes. No, I want you to be. I need to break through this because it's not an isolated, as you nailed it, it's not an isolated event. Someone will come to me with information, or let's just say they come with an energy,
yeah.
And that energy knocks me off my socks.
No, the energy comes. sweetie, let's parse this. The energy comes, you have a fear that you will lose love, and you lie. And your lying knocks you. Their energy cannot knock you off home. Your lack of integrity knocks you off home. You have a fear, you tell a lie. The fear itself is a lie. I can lose their love. So that you're off home right there. And then you start to manipulate based on a lie, and that totally takes you off base. But their energy cannot do that to you. You must willingly start to lie to yourself, or they, that's why Viktor Frankl said there are two ways to go to the gas chamber, free or not free. So I'm being extremely tough on you now. How's this landing, sweetie?
I'm trying to let it in. I like you said, I think I have to slow it way down and see
way down.
What it is
for slow motion.
Yeah, when somebody, a loved one, says something out of your
So the energy
face.
Hits you and you
yeah.
see it's not physically damaging to you, but it sends you into a panic inside, right?
Yes.
And the panic is based on past trauma, which we can either talk about or not. Doesn't matter.
No, doesn't matter.
But the trauma pattern says, I have to lie or they're not going to love me. And that lie is what unseats you every time. Slow it down and watch.
And is that connected to, I have to make them, it's my responsibility to make them feel better? Is that the same
Yes,
thing
that's just a different version
way?
Of it. It's the if then. If I don't make everyone happy, I will be unloved. I will be alone. I will be attacked. I'm not safe. I'm not loved. I can make mistakes. You're in the wrong foundation. You're not in integrity. You're in all the illusions. The illusion of danger, the illusion of the loss of love and separation, and the illusion of error. They're all illusions.
Yeah, they are.
So
I almost look forward to the next time I get knocked off my rocker.
Right. And you guys, don't go out and try to get just right in every relationship all the way, because that's where we're going for the next unit. Just notice that as Gia and Judy have talked, we are slowing down something that already happened. And we're taking it apart bit by bit, the anatomy of a lie. When did the feeling come in that took me away from I am infinitely loved, I am always safe, I can never make a mistake? Where did that lie come in? And then where did I start to trigger into trying to control other people or my environment by leaving my integrity? And did that work? How has it left me feeling? Did it really build intimacy? Go deeper. Where am I lying to myself and losing myself? And then start finding your own home again. Remember, peace is your home. And everything you've ever asked for is given to you by the universe. But it always sends everything good to your real address, which is home and which is peace. Because if you got your rewards outside of peace, it would train you to leave peace. All the rewards come when you arrive at peace. And integrity and peace are basically the same thing. So by going back to the place where you lied and finding the truth, and then communicating the truth in love, according to your integrity, you come home to peace, and everything you've been asking for your whole life can finally reach you. This is how it works. And this is why this cleanse, like, of all the interventions I've ever done on my own self, is the most powerful by far. And it's still just blooming and blooming. Like, new things keep coming out of it. So there's one more person who emailed in, and I don't know if she's confirmed to coach on the call. Her name was Anna Lee. She's living in the UK or South Africa, so I don't know if she's on the line. Press star 2 if you're on the line, Annalie. In the meantime, I hope everybody is finding a moment in their own lives where they're skidding away from their integrity because of fear, and then analyzing how the result of that is never positive, and then thinking, what would, if I were to tell the absolute truth, which means telling the truth about how I feel and why I lied, what would happen then?
Is this Anna Lee?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, here.
Ah, good.
All the way from far, far, far.
Yes.
How are you today, or this evening for you?
Well, this has been an amazing call so far. I have been listening to this over and over.
Oh, good.
Oh, wonderful. Wow, this is really quite
okay.
Wonderful.
All right, so you wrote us an email about a decision to move from South Africa to the UK, and then you had a hard time adjusting, and your kids are still in South Africa, and it wasn't great for them. So now you're going back and forth, right?
Yeah.
What was so interesting about your email is that you wrote a decision. Sometimes decisions might be somehow outside of either right or wrong for you. So your example is the way you moved and had this sort of chaos arise out of it, but then you went to a massage therapist and this massive body trauma release occurred, and you said you found a whole new level of healing.
Yes.
So you wrote at the end, so I guess what I'm asking for is reassurance that even if I didn't get this decision thing right, or I don't get this decision thing right, which makes my meat self very anxious, she writes, I will still get it right, which my meta self kind of already knows. So where are you now? Are you in Africa or England?
In England.
All right. So really, this is just a matter of, let's go back. Well, this is a past decision. It's not as current as the other two callers. So go back to the decision when you chose to leave South Africa for the UK. Do you remember how the decision went, what was going on, the discussions you had with your husband and your daughters?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what was the feeling that went with the decision?
Fear.
So it was based on fear?
Yes.
So do you mind talking about what the stories were? What was the fear telling you?
Well, it kind of evolved a few years before that. We started getting uncomfortable with what was happening in South Africa. It's quite unpredictable, the society, and lots of crime and things
right.
like that.
Right. Yeah.
And
it's unstable and frightening, for sure.
Yes. And the original idea was to go over as a family.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time, and it was done for the family's sake. But by the time the job offer came, my kids didn't want to go anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of, the reason changed somewhat to, okay, we're older, there's this opportunity.
I'm so sorry. I can kind of hear your voice is very muffled for me. Bridget, are you hearing this?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I'll
so
try again.
Would you mind like yelling a little?
That's better. I think just getting closer to the speaker or whatever you're doing now is better.
Okay.
Oh,
yes.
That's much, much better. Okay.
Oh. Good. Yes. So the. We had to rethink the decision because our daughters weren't going with us anymore. And we thought, okay, we're getting older. This is an opportunity maybe that may work out well for the original reasons anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So the reasons changed somewhat. And so we went. And it was very hard. It didn't work out at all.
Right.
I hoped it would work out. And actually, well, we were here 3 days, and I told my husband, I want to go back now.
Right.
Just hang on for another 3 days.
Okay. So, Annalie, could you do something for me?
Yes.
You just got to England, and you're panicking. Okay, so where
mm-hmm.
were you? Were you in a flat? Were you in a house? Were you out on the street?
Yes.
Where were you panicking?
In a flat where we were staying while we
okay.
were looking for accommodation. Yes.
Okay, so notice
mm-hmm.
yourself in that flat and notice the panic. Yeah? Were you sitting
mm-hmm.
on a couch? Were you sitting on a chair? Where were you?
Oh, I don't know if I was sitting. I just remember the being in that place
okay.
and not liking it.
Mm-hmm. No matter. Okay. So now what I want you to do is feel the sensation of panic
mm-hmm.
and notice that you are believing I am not safe, I can lose love, and I can make a mistake. Can you see how that's the worldview that's causing this anxiety?
Yes, yes.
So
definitely.
Right there, this is what I've been hammering this home on this call because as I read through everybody's experiences and talked to people, what I saw was that when we make a decision from the place of believing that we're not safe, we're not loved, and we can make a mistake, it's the rest of the decision sort of bobs and weaves and slips around because there's not a foundation of truth. Because those aren't just happy stories that we're all always loved, always safe, never make a mistake. The heart feels that as truth and the body calms. Yeah? So if you
mm-hmm.
imagine that you're going in, and this whole thing has been about going back to situations and redoing them. And believe me, I've done this with decisions that I've made throughout my life. I've gone back in and redone
uh-huh.
them with integrity, and it changes your future. It's crazy fun.
Oh.
It's magic.
Wow.
So what we're going to do, how old were you when you were sitting on the couch panicking?
51.
And how old are you now?
57.
All right. So right now at 57, you're going to walk into that flat where your 51-year-old self is freaking out,
mm-hmm.
right? There
mm-hmm.
she sits, wringing her hands, rocking, begging to go home, terrified, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're going to go slow this way down. You're going to sit down on the couch beside her, and you are an angel for her. You're an angel from your own future, so she doesn't see you. But you're able to put your arm around her shoulders and you say, sweetheart, you are always safe. You are infinitely loved. You cannot make a mistake. This all works out well. It's okay. You're going to discover things because of this that you would never have discovered if you'd not been so adventurous. You can't even imagine the amazing things that will happen when you have this trauma release. You're going to be on a call in 2015 with a bunch of people talking about integrity. It'll be amazing. And you can tell her for sure that this is going to happen to her. You know, you are here. And then you can always say, my favorite thing to say to my younger self is, and here's the deal, in my world, you no longer exist. So I'm not that worried about what happens to you.
Yeah, that sounds kind of cool.
It's weirdly true, but can you feel her calming a little bit?
Yes, yes.
And it is absolutely for sure. You can tell her this. You have the evidence in front of your eyes that she will survive this and do amazing things with it. Huh?
Yes, yes.
So then you kindly, kindly say to yourself, you guys, self-talk is huge. Kind self-talk. Do unto yourself as you would do unto others. So right now you can say, Annalie, you wrote in your email that you know that you were meant to get a whole new level of healing and you got the decision thing right because you played with it, and now you can feel where you slid into error, and it turns out that you just slipped when it came to believing that you're safe and loved and that you can never make a mistake. That's the only mistake you're making now, sweetheart. And if you make it again, that's okay. Life will keep teaching you this because it's what you came to this planet to learn.
Oh, that is so nice.
Isn't it wonderful? And you can just say, oh, yes. you are amazing. Look what you did. You went off into nothing, a pioneer, and you dealt with the alienation of a new culture and a new world when you were 51 years old. That's very brave. And you did so well with it. And yeah, you were frightened, but you hung in there. And I'm so proud of you. You cannot make a mistake. You are infinitely loved, and you are always safe. This place will always steer you. But you guys on the phone, Annalie, everybody, and Annalie, you were so right. You already knew when you wrote that you were doing the right thing. But I'm so glad you asked for reassurance because that's what you needed. And it was in your integrity to say, I think I know what I'm doing, but I need reassurance. Could you please reassure me?
Yeah.
So, of course, with such vulnerability and sweetness and truth and no desire to manipulate, just asking for what you really need, there's no way I couldn't reach out and say, oh, yeah, I am right there with you. You are doing so well. You deserve all the reassurance in the world. So you guys, this as you go forward into your, and thank you so much, Annalia. Do you feel complete?
Yeah. May I ask one quick question? I know the time's over. What I'm experiencing now, I just want a little more reassurance from you. I feel like I'm living in two realities. And the one is the concrete one and the older one. And the other one is like magic and miracles. But it's as if I cannot. It's almost as well, it's a wonderful reality, but which is sometimes frightening because I can't control it. Just things just happen. I guess I can go to the infinite love.
I'm sorry, I can't understand you again. Could you speak?
Oh. Okay, where did you leave me? I was talking about these two realities.
Two realities. One is magical and the other one is concrete.
Yes. And Well, the one is miraculous and magical. It's also, it's as if I cannot control it, so I'm sometimes frightened of it.
So you can't control it, so you're frightened? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. You are really, really speaking for the group here. And those of you, I have not mentioned this on this call, but if you guys know my work and if you've come to things before, you know that from the time I was born, I've felt that we are here to participate in something, a shift in the way people think and live in the world. And some people call it the transformation of consciousness, and it feels imminent to many of us. And it involves a shift away from the way people have been thinking in our recent past, which is all about material security. You are not safe. You are not loved. You can make mistakes. You've got to grab what you can. And this new way of thinking feels so risky. But I want you to notice what happens when people don't follow this heartfelt, spiritual, magical path. The human race murdered 100 million people in the 20th century alone based on that old way of thinking. It feels concrete because we're used to it. But it actually does not work well in practice. And as you practice a different way of working that is based in the magical and the miraculous, you begin to see, oh, my God, when I go home, everything works the way I've always felt it should. And I could never force it. I tried so hard to do everything right the old way, and still, you know, my heart wasn't full. I was lonely. I didn't have enough. But, oh, my God, when I do this miracle path, this integrity path, everything works, but I don't know why. So going back to what Bridget and I said at the top of the class, this is how we run our business. This is how we run our lives. And every single moment is a leap into the unknown. And I've been doing it ever since my son was diagnosed with Down syndrome. And I either lived in a world where his life was a tragedy, or I lived in a world of miracles. Those were my choices. And for that reason, I practiced. Every time I'd look at my baby, my child, my young man, I have to go to that world to find peace for myself, because the old world and what it said about how his life would not work because he couldn't do the old things, it was all a lie. So it could not support me. And yeah, when I go into the belief that by living this way, we will be provided for, we will be loved, we will be brought into community, we will have adventures, we will have joy beyond imagining, we will be cared for and feel cared for always. You know, magic, miracles, love, joy, all these wonderful things. It always feels insane to my socialized mind. But I can tell you that I've been practicing it for a lot of years, and it works better than the other system. And when I got to the total integrity, it started working like some crazy Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory kind of give you everything you want factory. So I think you've done so much, Annalie, to be brave and go forward in your life, and you're learning this. But we never get to the point where the rational mind, or at least we haven't until we go through the transformation of consciousness, where the rational mind says, oh, that'll work. So we have to go inward. And so instead of just notice which one gives you peace.
Yes.
That's all. You know, $1 million maybe, but peace, absolutely. And if you have $1 million and no peace, you won't be happy anyway. And if you don't have $1 million and you are at peace, you will be happy anyway. And then you'll get $1 million. I don't know that for sure. That's just the way it always works for me. So we're 2 minutes over time, but it has been such a joy to talk to you. Let me just, Annalie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Martha. Thank you very much.
Big hugs. So we've talked about relationships all the way through this. The worksheet for going on for the next unit is all about dealing with relationships. And just remember what Bridget said about not rushing off and telling the worst person in your life the whole truth you've been holding back for 20 years. You know, stay home. Stay at home. It's a place of great stillness. It's a place that is always sharing from the heart. Okay, and it will tell you, your integrity will tell you whom to speak with and what to say and how to say it. And before you've gone home and checked those things, don't just blurt from a place of fear. Remember to take every step in integrity, and it will teach you at every moment along the way what's to be done next. So, Bridget, did I leave anything out for this next unit?
I don't believe so, and if we happen to have overlooked anything, we can cover it with people in the Facebook group and at the top of next week, so there are no mistakes.
No mistakes. Infinitely loved, always safe. I can't say that too many times. Put it on your wall. Stick it up there. Keep remembering it. It's the truth. And I feel it so much when I talk to you guys, how loved you are. So I will see you next week. Good luck with this unit, and on with integrity.
Thank you, Martha.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.